Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for joining the podcast today.
Morning, Jonathan. How are you?
Yes, very, very well, thank you. Very well. Yourself?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks. Pretty good. Enjoying the sunshine down on the south coast as ever.
Yes, yes, it's been a sunny one down south. Hopefully that continues and we start to see some temperatures which are more acclimatised for this time of year going forward. But, I mean, talking about the timing of certain things, I mean, we mentioned last week that the sell in May and go away statistics that we've seen in the past. Yesterday, we did see an element of that with a big sell-off in the FTSE 100. We have seen that rebound to some extent today. But there's one element of this that I want to touch on before we get into the three equities that we are going to discuss today. When we were looking at the biggest themes in markets last week, we touched on inflation and what it meant for commodities with the rising metal prices that we're seeing. It was driving miners higher. That was an interesting topic that we discussed then. But what we saw yesterday with this sell-off here in Europe, really, and it was obviously over in the United States as well, is fear from inflation and what that means for markets going forward. That's one of the biggest drivers that we saw in equity markets yesterday. But we've covered commodities, Alan, in some detail in the last podcast. So I want to touch on an area now of the FTSE 100 and a sector of the FTSE 100, which isn't strictly speaking one of the sectors by industry, but it's a group of stocks which can be known as bond proxies. Now, one of the consequences that we've seen of rising inflation is, of course, rising bond yields. Now, when we're seeing a 10-year bond yield over the United States at 1.6, that is significantly higher than the lows that we saw last year of about 0.5%. So that does actually propose present itself to investors as a viable investment now, which actually gives quite a significant yield. Down at 0.5%, the yield's pretty weak. But when you get up to 1.6%, it starts to become interesting again. This does pose a problem, in my view, to a selection of stocks known as the bond proxies that fund managers tend to buy into when there's a lack of yield elsewhere in the market. They're looking for equities that have reliable cash flows, that have significant dividends compared to underlying benchmark rates of bonds. Those type of stocks in the FTSE 100 tend to be the likes of Unilever, Reckitt-Benckiser, National Grid, potentially Diageo. They are always distributing back to shareholders and actually give themselves that designation as a bond proxy due to the reliability of the income that they see. But Alan, when we're starting to see bond yields rise as we are, how much of an issue do you think this is going to be for these shares going forward, given that some of the revenue growth for these companies has been pretty weak of late? I mean, they've had a tough time this year. I mean, do you see that continuing for these types of stocks?
I think it's a challenge, isn't it? Because as inflation starts to creep in, prices start to creep up, it puts pressure on the consumers of the products that these companies offer. You know, like Unilever, obviously household products. If those are going to increase in price, we've seen people come off furlough schemes now. Some people won't be able to go back to work, so it could put real pressure on a lot of households and force them to purchase economy products. And of course, it could mean some of the brands don't get purchased, which will hit ultimately the bottom line of those companies. But in regard to the growth of the economy, we've had the numbers out this morning, of course, from the growth of the UK economy, 2.1% growth in February, and a forecast 7% growth for 2021. So that's very encouraging. But of course, if inflation does start to creep in, we could well see that growth capped as households and spending in general is hit by higher prices. So there's a fine balancing act that the Chancellor's got to deliver here, and of course I think it's going to be very much the case of sucking the sea going forward as we come out of lockdown, as the leisure industry starts to get back into its rhythm, and we start to see sales, we start to see travel start to return to normal. I think the jury's very much out on that. So it's a difficult one to manage.
Yeah, and I think there's also the factor that these bond proxy stocks do tend to be labelled as defensive in nature. So they tend to be ones that you buy when the economy is on the down. And of course, now with things opening up, we're starting to see, as you mentioned there, GDP expand, economies reopen. These type of shares are, to some extent, shunned for the more cyclical ones that we've discussed in some details. Just before we move on to the three equities, we have discussed mining stocks in some detail, but I just want to touch on very, very quickly, because this is something that I think a lot of listeners would have noticed, that we've seen metal prices going through the roof this week, but we haven't seen as strong a reaction in mining shares, especially FTSE 100 mining shares, as one would have expected. I mean, what do you think that's down to? Do you think there's an element of inflation and higher metal prices already being priced into stocks, or do you think there's a little bit of sort of nervousness about how far they've come in such a short period when you're looking at the likes of sort of Rio Tinto, Glencore, Antofagasta, BHP?
Yeah, I think there's general concern in the market about the pace of the economic recovery post COVID. This recovery, I'm firmly invested into, and I believe is going to, you know, commodities are going to drive this recovery. We are, I believe, in a new commodity super cycle, as a lot of the major investment banks are saying. But of course, it never goes up in a straight line. And I think investors are nervous, and sometimes if data is published that is a concern, and of course we have this concern about debt, you know, the debt levels that governments around the world are now in as a result of COVID, and of course they will need to take on more debt to reconstruct elements of society, and of course it's well documented that the US, for example, the internal states in the US are very, very underinvested, and there's a lot of infrastructural renewal and modernization that's required in that country. Likewise, of course, we've seen COVID-capped economic recovery in China, and of course that monster that's just consuming more raw materials, the wheels there are starting to turn again. So we have all these factors, but there are, all of the elements are in place, I believe, to continue to drive this, and we're going to see shocks and corrections along the way, but if you look at this over the longer term, I think don't get shaken out by the short term drops and shocks. Use those and view those as an opportunity to top up and add to your holdings. That's the view I'm taking going forward anyway.
Yes, I mean, certainly looking at the bounce that we've seen in the FTSE 100 today, given the sell-off yesterday, it does look as though a lot of people are buying that that dip. So I'm sure next week when we touch on the markets again and what the FTSE 100 has done, if we see it continue in the March higher in the FTSE 100 up until that point, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these mining names are amongst some of the top risers that that drive that that rally there. So just before we go into the three equities that we discussed today, I just want to thank everybody that's been leaving comments in the review section for the podcast. We're going to do our best to incorporate some of the suggestions that you've had into the podcast that we do with Alan and also a number of the other ones that we do as well. So please keep those coming. Alan, first stock that we're going to discuss today, one we've touched on previously, so listeners to the podcast will be familiar with it, but it's one that's got a number of interesting projects in lithium. It's Cadence Minerals. What's the latest update from them?
It's the latest update actually concerns the iron ore project, which is their flagship iron ore project in Amapá in Brazil, Jonathan. There are, I'll touch on the lithium project as well, but Cadence Minerals, and this is, you know, this is another company I think that is very well positioned to take full advantage of this commodity super cycle. We've seen a sharp increase in the iron ore price. I think, Jonathan, you published something on the UK Investor Twitter feed the other day, just showing the increase in the iron ore price. And I also published something on my own personal Twitter handle, just showing the timing of bringing this project back to life. So the Amapá project is owned by Cadence Minerals. First of all, is a mining is a company that invests into mining and metals projects to power the new economy. Iron ore, of course, is a key element in economic recovery and infrastructure for steel production and so on. And the company invested into this several years ago. The Amapá iron ore project was a producing mine, produced up to 2013, and was owned formerly by Anglo American and Clough's. Anglo American valued the Amapá iron ore project at $600 million on their books in 2012. There was a collapse at the privately owned port at Santana, and that coincided with the iron ore price being on, or the price of iron ore being very low. So it resulted in the mine being put into administration, and Cadence and his partners have bought the mine out of administration. They have undertaken a series of stages in bringing the mine back to life. They are now able to run the railway. They are recommissioning the Amapá mine. But most significantly, in the early stages, they have iron ore stockpiles down at the Santana port, and they are now shipping. They now have permission to ship the load out and sell it globally. Prior to the collapse, the product was being sold all over the world. It's good quality. And again, this has been bought by one of the world's largest resource and mining resource companies. They announced on Monday that the second shipment had taken place, and 7.5 million real had been deposited into the judicial account, and this is a judicial account there to pay the ex-employees and small creditors. And of course, these are people living in the Amapá region who've been waiting for this money for some time. So it's very much a process of regeneration for the Amapá region in Brazil. The final element of this process is a settlement with the major creditors. There are three banks involved in this process. One apparently has agreed to all of the conditions, and the other two banks are very close to signing off on those. Once those documents are signed, Cadence will then own 20% of the Amapá project. And of course, that currently the company is trading with a market cap of just 41 million. And that takes into account not just the Imapa project, but all its other projects as well. So once this comes back to life, you can get some idea of the potential upside in the stock. The companies, so the shares in Cadence so far this year, currently trading at 28p. They've been as high as 31p and as low as 5.5p. But it's a very good looking chart there. If you're an investor, you'll just see it's been gradually, steadily building through the year on the back of these developments. So MAPRA is, you know, it's very much moving forward, and we expect to hear news on that final stage in the coming weeks. So the company also owns 12% of European Metals Holdings in and EMH, of course, owns the Sinovec lithium project on the in Czechoslovakia, and that is a huge asset that's going to be used in the future to power the EV industry in Europe, and of course it's there is talk that there is going to be a big, huge battery gigafactory built nearby to the mine. So Sinovec is going to be very much a hub for the European EV industry. Other investments, the company has 30% of the Megalit and Mexilit joint ventures with Bacanora Lithium at the Sonora Lithium project in Mexico. And of course, recently, we've heard that there's a cash offer for Bacanora Minerals, Bacanora Lithium, which is great news for that whole region. The company has an interest in hard lithium projects in Brazil, and also back to iron ore, it has a small stake in MacArthur Minerals, which owns the Lake Giles iron ore asset in Australia. Also in Australia, it owns a 30% joint venture in part of the Yangibana rare earths project in Western Australia, and there are a couple of assets on the site there, which is being operated by Hastings Technology Metals. So the combination of these assets, the assets both early stage and late stage, are very exciting indeed. But it's really a MAPRA that's driving the value at the moment, and all eyes are on that for when the company completes the next step or the next phase of and completes the initial investment.
So you said there, Alan, that the iron ore is the flagship project for the company at the moment. Do you think that's the main driver behind the share price at the moment as well? Do you think the investors are to some extent eyeing the lithium and what that could bring as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, lithium, of course, we've seen a huge increase in the lithium price as well this year. I think it was up to $80,000 a ton. If my memory serves me correctly, I might need to check that. But certainly there's been a surge in the price of lithium this year. And with the range of assets that Cadence has, of course, it invests into with investment in European Metals Holdings, that is pure lithium. That's driven the price as well. But the real, even though these assets are there to, they're within the group, and we've also got the hard lithium assets, the Bokaso, Litchfield, now Kuta assets in Australia that have potential for development going forward. In the near term, the value driver for Cadence is the Imapa iron ore project, quite simply because it's an infrastructure that will be recommissioned within the next few years, and brought back to life as a producing mine. It's previously valued at $600 million on Anglo-American's books, and that was, you know, at a time when the iron ore price was much lower than it is now. As part of the recommissioning process, Cadence have undertaken a further mineral resource estimate, which has increased the mineral resource estimate at Imapa by some 20%. So, of course, with all those factors combined, it's very likely that once Imapa is brought back to life, it's going to be worth an awful lot more than $600 million. So that's a very exciting prospect. And given that Cadence and its partners have been instrumental in restructuring the mine and bringing it back to life, Once the final agreement is signed with the banks, then Cadence has 20% of of the entire project, with an option to increase to 27% for a further $3.5 million investment, and also it'll have the rights to own up to 49% going forward. So you can see why investors are excited about this, and obviously the potential once the mine's producing and it's back to life, there's potentially a huge revaluation for Cadence Mineral shares despite the increases we've seen already.
Fantastic. I'm sure one that we will touch on again, Alan, in the podcast. So moving on now, Itaconix. Now, this is a company that, in my view, has very strong ESG and sustainable credentials. It's operating in a technological field to some extent with the production of polymers, which are used in cleaning energy and hygiene, as well as agriculture. I think we have mentioned them on the podcast previously, Alan, but this is a company that is very much in its growth stage, very much expanding. So what's the latest installment of news been from them?
Yeah, this is a really interesting company. And as you say, Jonathan, it ticks all of the ESG boxes. Itaconix is all about it's a company that develops sustainable, bio-based, environmentally friendly products, bio-based polymers based on itaconic acid, hence the name Itaconix. And of course, these have applications in laundry, in water softening, detergents, agriculture, industry, and a vast range of applications. The company already has a number of joint ventures in place with companies like Croda companies in the US. And it's undergone a process of transformation over the past year, or the past couple of years, as it's as sales of the products that it supplies into have increased. And I think at one stage there was some uncertainty. This is going back a few years ago. There was some uncertainty about the viability of the company going forward under its own steam. So it's a great achievement by the chief exec John Shaw and his team to have brought it brought the company to where it is now. So of course there was the company raised some funds last year, and John Shaw said at that point the company was entering a new phase in commercial growth in 2020, and they were seeing very strong momentum. The company appointed a lady called Mona Manning as vice president of marketing and sales in the US, and she has a considerable track record with some of the market leaders, Creamer and Scivation and Abitech. But it's really the full year results that the company announced at the end of March that have really crystallized the progress the company has made, and really shown just how far the company's come. It delivered 155% growth in revenue to $3.29 million. Adjusted EBITDA, although it delivered a loss of $993,000, the EBITDA actually increased by nearly 60% from what was nearly a $2 million loss the previous year. The company also ended the year with net cash of $1.5 million, up 89%. The progress and the pace of sales is increasing exponentially across the group. And that's been reflected in the share price. I mean, I'm looking at the share price at the moment, just over 10p. It's up 2% today. We've seen the shares hit just under 13p rather on the year, and that's of course from trading for a long time, throughout last year at just over a penny. So anyone that held these shares has seen a spectacular return already, a tenfold return. And that's all really happened since the start of the year. So we had that announcement from the company on its four-year results in March. So nothing since then, but we are due a trading update very soon. So it's a very exciting stage, this company. I think, John Shaw and his team should be commended for bringing the company as far as they have.
So I don't know. I mean, this is a company that's got significant levels of IP and patents within the company. I mean, with the progress that it's made and the products that it has, does it make it, in your view, a potential takeover target for some of the bigger players in the market?
Very much so. I mean, yeah, as you rightly say, it's got its IP firmly embedded across a number of products. It's embedded in a new generation of dishwashing detergents. Its product Xenador polymers are sold through Croda, and those are basically used in odor control. It's got IP in hair fixative polymers sold by Nurion, chemicals company, Velafresh, which is used in underarm deodorant. And of course the BioAsterix, which is used in plant-based functional ingredients across a range of applications. So it's got these multiple applications, but I it wouldn't surprise me at some stage to see a company perhaps like Croda or one of the larger chemical companies take a look at what Itaconix is doing and see it as a very good fit. But all the while, of course, they're independent. You know, we've already seen great growth in the share price in 2021. Even given that, the company still has a market cap of just 42 million. And of course, it's going up against the multi-billion pound companies that are already in the sector. So, yeah, I think there's huge scope and potential for takeover. So anyone that's held the shares, from the 1.5p level, should be and will be very excited.
Indeed. And this is a story that I see developing. So we will keep readers updated as we hear more from this company. So, Alan, we're going to finish off with one company here. Sorry. In Mode, we've touched on it previously on the podcast, and Mode have actually been on the podcast. We had a good chat just as they IPO'd. I think it was last year. So this is quite an interesting stock because it's an app that facilitates the payments and buying and selling and trading of Bitcoin. We've seen Bitcoin going through the roof this year. It has eased off slightly. However, I'm looking at Mode's share price here, Alan. And yes, we've had a spike up and we were trading around 77 pence back in February. But since then, it seems to have tailed off. I mean, what's happening here with this stock? Is it a case that people are looking at Bitcoin and seeing this as a proxy to some extent for the Bitcoin price and see that falling off and thinking, well, maybe we're not going to see the gains in the share price in line with Bitcoin? Or is it a case that maybe their application and their service isn't what consumers or investors are looking for?
Okay, well, it's a very interesting point. That, I mean, on the Bitcoin front, yeah, absolutely, it's a proxy for Bitcoin because Mode announced shortly after it came to market that it had adopted Bitcoin as its treasury's reserve asset with up to 10% of its cash reserves held in BTC. So it's very much subject to the vagaries of movement in that market. But as you say, I mean, the app is it's an open banking app designed to facilitate the easy buying and selling of Bitcoin and the seamless transition into use of bank accounts to add money and to obviously withdraw money from Bitcoin into the bank account. And I actually downloaded the Mode app and I've used it, and it is as good as they say it is. It's a very efficient and seamless app, certainly compared to a lot of the others. I mean, Coinbase obviously is very good. We all know that. But Mode, I think, you know, considering the size of the company, it's right up there in its functionality and its ease of use. We know Mode already has partnerships in China with Tencent, Alipay, and WePay, and it's developing a solution for businesses, an open banking solution for businesses by just offering a really simple solution for merchants to utilize the payment facility and the new open banking protocols. As the company's gone forward, it's raised more money. There was an oversubscribed placing at 0.55p in February, raised 6 million to development to further develop the solution. And it also appointed a fellow called Jonathan Conway as CTO in March. Jonathan was instrumental in putting together the payments and security sections for the UK open banking specification. And prior to that, he was API and payments architect at MasterCard. So they're bringing some very good people in. In April, the company announced that Bitcoin trading volumes had increased again by 316%. And it's also filed for a listing in the US. We've seen with a lot of other companies in this space, and in fact, Coincilium, who we've spoken about, are also dual listed both on Aquis and on the OTC venture market in the US. There's a great deal of interest and a great market in the US with US investors getting involved in these sort of stocks. So I think that listing will prove to be a big price driver for Mode going forward. And to bring us up to date today, the company's just appointed a fellow called Ryan Moore as the new chief executive, who's going to work alongside the founder and chairman, Jonathan Rowland. Ryan Moore is ex-Baker Hughes, the energy technology giant, and he's been very much involved with Mode since day one. So that's another asset to bring to the management team in driving this forward. So yeah, I think Mode are just working behind the scenes to further develop the various offerings it has in this space. But certainly, having looked at a number of apps and used a number of apps in this space, the Mode app is one of the very best. And I think this company's got a great future. And when you know that US listing is going to be key to the growth going forward.
So, Alan, I mean, this is a company, one of the few companies listed in London that's operating in the crypto space. And I've spoke to people that were some months ago trying to make comparisons to Argo blockchain and the success in the share price there and the potential for Mode to have a similar run in the shares. I mean, do you think that is a possibility, or do you think they're two completely different companies operating in two completely different areas of crypto, and it's very difficult to make comparisons between the two?
Yeah, it's completely different, Jonathan. I mean, the Argo blockchain, of course, is all about Bitcoin mining, and of course, we know the more Bitcoin you can mine, the more your valuation grows. And Argo is invested in developing these huge mining centers in the US and Canada. And of course, we know there the CEO is being paid in Bitcoin, which I think is just the best advertisement you could possibly have for the company. Yeah, so the Argo Bitcoin miners, Mode facilitate Bitcoin trading, but dovetailing that into the new UK open banking initiative. So it's, if you like, it's the next step down the road. It's making the process of investing in Bitcoin and incorporating Bitcoin with your normal banking activities into one seamless package. And they've done that very well, and that's only going to get better. So that is exciting. The growth potential is still huge, but there are going to be different drivers in that market. But the Bitcoin price will still very much have a bearing on the valuation of the company.
So, I mean, there's obviously the Bitcoin. Just to finish off here, Alan, there's the price of Bitcoin, which, of course, is a big driver of the shares in Mode. But, I mean, what are the other key metrics that investors should be looking for? Because they make and revenue from transactions. What are the key metrics here? Is it users, number of transactions, volumes? What should investors be looking out for?
Yeah, at the moment it's they're just trading in Bitcoin. Ethereum, of course, will be coming soon. But it's the ability for businesses to transact in the same way. So payments. Payment for businesses, partnerships with businesses. Once the payment system for merchants is launched, then this will enable companies to take payments in Bitcoin, companies to receive payments in cash, convert to Bitcoin, and just provide a seamless process. And this is so many of these applications are really clunky and hard to use. And I think what Mode are doing, they're just bringing seamless technology into the offering. So it's as we see companies take up the Mode app to receive payment or integrate the Mode app into their payment systems. When you start to see these announcements, that's going to be the next phase of growth, I think for the company. But the company is already a long way down the road with this. There's an awful lot of work going on behind the scenes, and I think certainly from the middle of the year onwards, we're going to see a series of developments and commercial developments and milestones being made as the group develops its commercial payment platform.
Indeed, and we will watch those with some interest. So, Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Pleasure. Thanks, Jonathan.
So just as a recap, there were three stocks that we discussed. There was Cadence Minerals that trades under the ticker of KDNC. Itaconics trades under the ticker of ITX. And just then was Mode, which trades under the ticker of MODE. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.